strangely unerotic piece of music entitled The Stripper. Now, I don't know you personally, so that may conjure up images of dingy pub back rooms, pints of mild, gyrating bodies and revolving tassels to you. To me, and perhaps I've led a sheltered life, it will always be the soundtrack to one of Morecambe and Wise's classic comedy routines. Morecambe and Wise are probably the best comedy double act to come out of this country. Or maybe they're just the best comedy double act ever, full stop. I mean, come on, who's been better? Hope and Crosby? Abbott and Costello? Widdicombe and Haig? Yes, they all make us laugh, but funnier than Eric and Ern? I don't think so. As with all great double acts, each depended on the other. But whilst Ernie Wise was much more than just a straight man, it was Eric who was the driving force. He was born John Eric Bartholomew in Morecambe in 1925, and his mum Sadie started the showbiz preparations early. He was sent to dancing classes from the age of 10.
I used to go to a dancing class, Miss Hunter's dancing class, with my cousin Peggy, who used to live up the street. And she came down, she took to my mother, she said, Auntie Sadie, she says, I'm going to dancing class next Saturday. And my mother said, how much is it? And she said, it's a shilling an hour. She said, well, take him with you. Because I was getting, you know, I was about 11 and I was getting a bit in the way then. So I used to go there and not really enjoy it. But Miss Hunter, after being there about 6 weeks, came and saw my mother and she said, I think this boy's got something, Mrs. Bartholomew. And my mother says, oh, yeah. And so Miss Hunter said, yes, I think he ought to have private lessons. You see, and private lessons within her front room. It was a thing I never really wanted to do. I never really wanted to be a performer.
Still, reluctant or not, Eric started doing the clubs around Morecambe before winning first prize in a talent show in Hoylake. The prize was an audition for the great bandleader and impresario Jack Hilton at the Palace Theatre in Manchester. And it was here that he met a song and dance man, the son of a Leeds railway porter called Ernest Wiseman, who, despite having what would later be immortalised as short, fat, hairy legs, was at this point actually a couple of inches taller than Eric.
I saw him give his audition in Manchester. He came onto the stage and he sang a song called I'm Not All There, There's Something Missing. He had a beret and he wore a cut-down sort of evening dress suit, like an ascot suit, with a very, very big safety pin in the front. And he had a bootlace tie and he had a big lollipop that he used to, and he used to sing, I'm not all there, there's something missing.
I'm not all there, so the folk declare. They call me Luby, nothing but a crazy...
All the band were there, and all the band said to me, well, Ern, nice knowing you, we found a replacement.
And that's just where I've got it. I know.
It always struck me that he always felt very self-conscious when his mum used to make him up in these comedy clothes and whiten his face a bit, put her makeup on, you know, and a bit of lipstick and all that. And he was always very self-conscious about being the dopey one. I think he would have been much happier as the smart sort of debonair type.
Cause I'm not supposed to be all there.
Well, poor Eric. But then we've all been dolled up by our mothers in ill-fitting suits and pancake makeup, which got me some pretty funny looks on my first day at university, I can tell you. Self-conscious or not, though, Eric's audition was a success, and he was given a part in a touring production, Youth Takes a Bow, where, still a schoolboy, he had to attend a different educational institution every 2 weeks. 2 months into the tour, Ernie, who had become a minor celeb through his appearances on radio with Arthur Askey, joined the company. And it was then that one of their later trademarks took shape. Two men in a bed.
Late one night, knock at the door. And it was a young woman called Doreen Stevens. She had this Ernie with her. And this would be at 11 o'clock at night saying, we can't get any digs anywhere for Ernie. Nobody will take him. No, you know, we can't get him in anywhere. So my mother said, oh, well, it's all right. He can sleep without Eric. So Ernie came in with me.
That's how it all
happened. Yeah, I'm afraid so.
What are you doing?
What? The only thing I can say is, somebody up there likes you. To have given you such a magnificent body.
What about my body?
Turn around slowly.
Turn around slowly?
Turn around slowly. Let's have a look. Ern?
Yeah?
You are the pocket Hercules.
I suppose you're right.
Yes. Do you know that when you move like you did just then?
Yes.
You can see all your manliness
Rippling. I'm not kidding. All live.
Yes.
And the noise as well.
Yeah, well, what's so marvelous about my magnificent body?
You can make a fortune with a body like that.
You think so?
Oh, I wouldn't kid you.
Come here. Yes. How could I make a fortune?
Male model.
Male model?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I should go pose for the students down at the university.
But I'm only little.
All the better.
Well, how do you mean?
They won't use up so much paint then, will they? Don't forget, there's a lot of money to be made in art and painting.
Oh, I know that. My auntie's got a whistler.
Now, there's a novelty.
Two men in a bed enjoying each other's company without any sexual overtones. Just like me and Ned Sherrin at Radio 4 boot camp. Taking the advice of Jack Hilton, Ernie had shortened his name from Wiseman to Wise, a name that would look much better up in lights. Suitably impressed, Eric's mum was soon getting similar ideas.
It actually happened through a lady called Adelaide Hall, who was a black singer, and her husband was a man called Bert Hicks, and he said, he was an American, and he said that the name Bartholomew wouldn't look good on a marquee. You know, which I didn't understand in those days, and neither did my mother. So she said, well, what do you mean? It wouldn't look good in the market. Well, you can't call Bartholomew. It's not a good name, you know, for a comedy comedian. He said, where did you come from? So my mother said, we come from Morecambe. He said, well, why don't you call yourself Morecambe? Which we did, and it was as simple as that.
So now they were Morecambe and Wise, but they weren't Morecambe and Wise. They were still two solo acts who got on well and larked about backstage, but performed separately. Once again, Eric's mum proved a major influence on her son's career by suggesting they come together. Following Mrs. Bartholomew's advice, Eric and Ern sketched out a routine and ran through it for Jack Hilton. He liked it and gave them a chance to try it on the next stop of the tour at Glasgow. Morecambe and Wise were born. So what was that first routine?
It was bad. It was a very, 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 very mediocre act in those days.
Mind you, we didn't think we'd got lots of ego and...
We used to come on. The first gag we ever did on the stage was he was singing.
Yes.
He was singing, How's About a Little Ramble in the Moonlight?
Yes.
That song. And I used to run on with a chair and a long fishing line with a piece of string down and an apple on the end of the string.
And I used to say...
And
what?
I used to put the apple... can I get him in?
Yes.
And I used to put the apple in the pit orchestra. Mm. And then he used to say...
I used to say, what are you doing?
And I used to say, I'm fishing.
But you don't catch fish with an apple, you catch fish with a worm.
That's all right, the worm's inside the apple. And that is the first gag we ever worked on the stage, and we're still doing it.
But the duo had only just perfected that class gag, which still makes me laugh, but then I'm easily pleased, when Ernie was called up for the Merchant Navy, and Eric was sent down the mines as a Bevin boy. Simcombe got out of the pits on account of a weak heart, and there can't be many occasions when you're grateful for a dicky ticker, but that's probably one of them. Back again with his mum, he went to live in Diggs in Chiswick to find work as a performer. By a strange coincidence, one day in 1947, he bumped into Ernie on Regent Street. But if that was a coincidence, an even stranger one was just around the corner.
I was in Diggs with my mother at Mrs. Jewer's in Chiswick, and looking for work. So, there used to be a periodical called The Performer, and it says, wanted straight men for the circus variety. So I went up and saw this man called Sanger. He said, would you like to, you know, to be in this? So I said, yes, I would. Because I was short of work and no money coming in. So he said, all right then. He said, you'll be a straight man to a comic. Do you mind that? I said, no, I don't mind being a straight man. So we fixed the wage. I think I got 10. And the comic was Ernie, perfectly true, and he was on 12.
Eric is straight man, Ernie is the funny guy. It's like playing Alan Shearer in goal and David Seaman up front, although there were occasions during Euro 2000 when that might have worked better. For Wise and Morecambe, though, it just didn't work. And after 6 months in the circus, dabbling in everything from animal training to knife throwing, they left and reverted to Morecambe and Wise. Eric the funny man, and Ernie the foil. Back in character, the genius began to emerge.
Listen, I want to talk to you.
Well, we can't wait till after the match.
By the time you get back from the match, I won't be here.
Oh, well, that's something to look forward to in case we lose.
I'm serious, I won't be here.
Could I get your hair done?
No.
Give it to me if you like, I'll drop it in on the way to the match. Short back and sides on the way in.
Now that's enough.
Collect it when I come out again.
That's enough.
Oh,
read that.
Telegram.
That's right, telegram. Read
it. When did you get that?
While you were in the back.
You've had that for 6 months and never told me.
Oh. Now stop the joking and read that telegram.
I don't like telegrams.
You don't like telegrams?
No.
Why not?
It reminds me of the telegram my mother got during the war. From the war office.
Really?
My dad was missing.
Sorry to hear that.
So was an army truck and 48 cases of corned beef.
By this time, Eric and Ern had entertained the troops with Ensa and had hit the big time when they were hired by the Moss Empire circuit. But they were still trying to find that distinctive voice, still striving to arrive at that moment where, well, as a performer, you, well, leave your influences behind and, well, become your own man. I remember how glad I was when I realised I no longer sounded like John Peel. But Eric always acknowledged the comedians who'd shaped his own comic persona.
People look at me and say, oh, you're very good. But I look at myself and I see in myself, I see Harry Secombe. Mm. I see Jimmy Jane. I see touches of Formby. Oh, 100 other comics. Yeah. I see in myself. And at Phil Silvers, I see. Mm. Sid Fields, I see. Mm. In myself. If you're lucky enough to work with all these people and you can somehow take the best from them and put it into your way, this is good.
Before long, they were invited to appear on a radio programme called Variety Fanfare, produced in Manchester. But at that time, it was Ernie who was very much the dominant partner, as producer Ronnie Taylor recalls.
When I first met them, and they were starting off in radio, they'd been quite successful as a supporting act in various variety productions and shows in the theatre. They wanted to make a name for themselves and decided that radio was the challenge. And it was always Ernie Wise who would come in, smoking his pipe, and sitting down opposite on the other side of the desk and talk about the act. Eric was never to be seen. He was, he always left it to Ernie to come in and do the salesmanship. And in a way, I can't think why this happened, because they were both equally good at selling themselves, but Ernie was always the man who smoked his pipe and said, now, this is what we want to do, and this is the way we're going, and can you give us the opportunity to do this kind of comedy?
Well, Eric, what's all this about you damaging your new car?
I don't know.
You don't know? Well, weren't you involved in a bit of a collision last week?
Was I?
Didn't you run into the back of something?
Did I? It's no good, you know. I shall have to come to rehearsals. You know that, don't you?
All right, forget it. Let's talk about something else. I know what would be interesting.
Well, so do I, but we can't talk about that, can we? Is it allowed?
What are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
I meant that letter you had from a listener this week. Go on, read it out.
Oh, all right, then. Here we are. It says, Dear Eric Morecambe, I have often seen you on television, on the films, in the theatre, and heard you on radio. I would be very interested to know what you do in your spare time. Signed, Mrs. Eric Morecambe.
The very earliest days that I remember Eric and Ernie was in a programme of theirs which John Ammons produced called You're Only Young Once.
Producer, presenter, and for me forever the voice of Top of the Form, Geoffrey Wheeler.
This was a radio series which started on North Region and I think went on to the network, and this used to be done down at Hume Hippodrome on a Sunday evening. And one particular Sunday evening I remember very well the plot of the sketch that rounded off the show was a cowboys and Indians situation, and Eric and Ernie were in a log cabin out in the Midwest, and with them was Robert Beatty, that deep brown transatlantic voice of his, and he was playing it for real and sounding tough, and the whole thing ended up with a tremendous fight as the Indians surrounded the place, and this fight went on and on with all kinds of sort of business radio punch up, and throughout this you could hear Eric's voice saying, very close on Mike, you're standing on my foot. Get off my foot. You're on my foot.
By now, Eric and Ernie were in the Premier League of variety theatre, but had yet to appear regularly on television. In 1952, though, whilst performing at the Winter Gardens in Blackpool, they were offered a TV series. It was called Running Wild, and though it promised much, it was, in the end, like the final episodes of Noel's House Party, an unmitigated disaster, although obviously without the inadvisable knitwear. Writer and producer Jim Casey.
It was a rather funny story Eric told me about that disastrous television series. He said they watched the first one, he and Ernie, and they decided they must try to get this thing stopped. They must ring up and plead with Ronnie Waldman, I think it was, he said, who was then in charge. They must plead with him to take this thing off, otherwise their career was ruined. And he said, he rang through to the BBC, Ronnie Waldman came on the phone, and Eric started to say, did you see the show last night? Wasn't it? And before he could say any more, Ronnie Waldman said, great, wasn't it? And Eric said he was so taken aback by this, he turned to Ernie and said, well, maybe it's us. And carried on talking, put the phone down, and he said, later on I realized it wasn't us, but it was too late, and the series went on, and they were practically finished in show business.
Tuesday, August the 10th, 1954. Audience rocked with laughter. I owe comedians Morecambe and Wise a sincere apology. My first view of them was in their recent TV series, and I switched off. Now I meet them at the Palace Theatre this week, and I am left wondering if they can possibly be the two artists who were in that television studio. They are, of course, but whatever it was that Broadcasting House did to them, they have left behind. And instead, we have two performers whose slick, first-time humour had last night's first house audience rocking in their seats. These two comedians are on the way up, provided they fight shy of television. That's fantastic, that.
Your Majesty!
Oh, here he is, the Great Plague of London.
What is it now, Clarendon?
It's about the fire of London, sire. The people are saying it was caused by you and Mistress Gwynne.
How?
A careless match.
Very witty.
Yes.
But you shall have an equally witty retort. Where's my writer? John Dryden!
I am here, Your Majesty, pen poised at the ready.
I want a witty riposte for Clarendon.
Let's see, how about shut your gob?
That's good. Oh, I like that. That's good. Clarendon?
Yes?
Shut your gob. Yes, I like it.
And if it pleases Your Majesty, wouldst thou care for a punch up thy brackets?
Who's your writer? Dryden? Oh, never mind, you're fired. I wonder what Sid and Dick are doing.
Sid and Dick being Sid Green and Dick Hills, the writing team behind Morecambe and Wise's eventual TV successes on Lou Grade's ATV network. After the embarrassment of Running Wild, they'd stayed away from television for 3 years, and we can only hope that Noel Edmonds does likewise. Wisely, Eric and Ernie came back to the small screen, not as stars in their own right, but in a supporting role to Winifred Atwell. This led to a starring spot on Sunday night at the London Palladium, and only then to their own half-hour show. They'd arrived. And simultaneously, they'd arrived in America too, after 14 successful appearances with Ed Sullivan.
The first time he ever introduced us, he introduced us as Morrow, Canby and Wise, and we felt like a seal act, and we kept looking for the third person all the time we were working. But over there, the Ed Sullivan show was akin to the Palladium show here, but not as good. They had big stars, and in the afternoons, they actually did the whole show in front of an audience. Mm-hmm. And Ed Sullivan, and this was his forte. Now, this is where it was good. He used to say, in, out, out, in, out, out, in, out, in, out. But acts like Ernie and I, we only used to do maybe 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then somebody would be thrown off, go to 5 minutes, and then somebody else would be thrown off. And we'd say, can I do 6 minutes, you know? If we'd have stayed in America, I think we could have become big American stars. And inasmuch as, in my opinion, that if you're an American star, you're also an international star. I think it's more difficult to be an international star if you stay in this country.
Yes.
Which I won't leave anyway. And we had a very, very nice time in the States.
And Eric was probably right. American stars do seem to be regarded as bigger international celebrities, although largely by other Americans, who think the US is the whole world anyway. Safely back in Britain, Morecambe and Wise stayed with ATV until 1968, when they defected to the BBC. Lured partly by the chance to work in colour. But it was to be a difficult year. Eric had suffered his first heart attack, and then, having turned their backs on America, Eric and Ernie found that their writers Sid Green and Dick Hills had themselves defected stateside. Eric's wife Joan.
When Eric heard that Sid and Dick weren't doing any more shows for them and they'd gone to work for somebody else, he was deeply hurt, because Eric instantly had this feeling that nobody thought he would ever work again, that he was written off, that his career was finished, and he really did believe that people believed his career was over. And none of us realised that they would, in fact, bounce back and be bigger than ever.
Enter stage left, the man many consider the best writer Morecambe and Wise ever had, Eddie Braben.
I watched mannerisms and attitude between the two, and I could see that Eric and Ernie, there was affection there, but there was more than affection there. They were very close. They were like two brothers. And I watched this. I thought, there's a lot there. Get that love and that affection across to an audience, and you're halfway home. It was almost like, it's them. That's what I wanted. I like to think I captured that.
Mark Anthony, you have been and always will be a fool.
You're treating me as a big prawn.
By nature, aunt.
I love you.
Of course
I want you,
do.
You to take me with you to Rome.
She lies.
Well, an actor.
She lies. She thinks all men are fools, and what makes them so is having Gucci like what she has got.
My queen.
What is it, Desdemona?
Looks more like Desert Common. A quiz song.
My queen, terrible news from abroad.
You want the Oscar back?
I want it back.
Eric and Ernie had been popular on ITV, but no one really expected them to become the megastars of the BBC. Something happened to make them a national institution. They became part of the fabric of the nation. Everyone knew Morecambe and Wise. Who will ever forget the days when their show was as much a part of Christmas as the Queen's speech, roast turkey, and making sure you got the receipt with your present from Grandma because it never fitted? At the height of their popularity, the Morecambe and Wise Christmas shows attracted unheard-of audiences of 25 million viewers. So what was it that propelled them to such heights of fame? Comedy writer and historian Glenn Mitchell.
Eric Morecambe had his first heart attack around that time, and the BBC, not being a commercial concern, were able to double the rehearsal time and the recording time to ease the burden. And as a result, the shows were far more polished. And the other ingredient, I think this made an even bigger difference, was that Braben turned their act around. Ernie had always been a rather straight man. He came across as being rather smug and often quite malicious, with Eric as the fall guy in most of the sketches. And a Braben, they turned it around so that more often than not, Ernie was the fall guy in the sketches, and Eric was much more assertive. He usually came out on top, and this allowed Ernie to become a funny man as well.
Of course, in any double act, it's the internal dynamic, the relationship between the two characters, that really matters. Traditionally, there's always been a straight man and a funny man, although there have always been notable exceptions. Laurel and Hardy, for example, no straight man there. Eric and Ernie were very conscious of their own roles. Ronnie Taylor.
They both knew what they were out to do, and although it's, I think, much more difficult to become original as a double act, because it's based on a formula of a feed and a funny man, here Eric and Ernie have managed to take that again into a class which is so distinctive, because over the years they've developed the means for them both to be funny, because their relationship is so very different from the normal double comedy act.
Of course, one of the reasons audiences loved them so much was because they didn't really seem to be playing characters at all. Okay, we probably knew that Ernie didn't write plays. We suspected they didn't really share a bed. We were sure that Eric didn't actually support Luton Town. When we found out he did, well, that was really funny.
0-0 at the moment for Luton. And Luton have got a free kick coming up now, which Bobby Thompson is just going to take. Yes, Anderson, it's there! It's there! Hey! How about that? How about that? Anderson, from a Bobby Thompson free kick. Hey, knockout! That's fabulous, that. I never realised that commentators got excited.
But Eric just seemed to be playing himself. Media executive Michael Grade.
There was an awful lot of Eric in the character, in his persona on the screen. That wasn't all there was to him. He was quite a serious man. You could have a serious conversation with him about stuff. But essentially, that was a big part. That's part of who he was. You can't divorce that. He couldn't act that. He couldn't act Eric on stage. That was part of him, the naughty schoolboy, the ad-libber, the man desperate to make people laugh and so on. That was That was part of him.
You're playing all the wrong notes.
I'm playing all the right notes, but not necessarily in the right order.
On the 29th of May, 1984, despite poor health, Eric Morecambe appeared at the Roses Theatre, Tewkesbury, for a public question and answer session with his old colleague from the Variety days, Stan Stennett. At the end of the show, with the audience wiping tears of laughter from their eyes, Eric left the stage, pitched forward, hit his head, and lay still. He'd had a third heart attack. He died in the early hours of the next day in the intensive care unit of Cheltenham Hospital. He was 58. It was a shattering blow, not only for his wife Joan and their children, not only for Ernie Wise, who partnered Eric for over 40 years, but also for the nation who'd lost its favourite clown.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while.
Even now, the sense of loss is palpable. England without Eric, it just doesn't seem right. Ernie never enjoyed any great success as a solo artist and died in 1999. That year, the duo were awarded a posthumous BAFTA for their contribution to comedy. And what a contribution it was.
He snapped. He's gone now. His wife doesn't like him doing that, you know.
How Tickled Am I was written and presented by Mark Radcliffe and produced in Manchester by Libby Cross.